Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Batya Brander, and today we will be studying Hosea Perek Zion, Chapter 7. In the last chapter, we began with a hope that the Jewish people would recognize that everything that happens had come from Hashem, both the good things and the punishments, and recognize that it is therefore Hashem who heals us. Unfortunately, however, it continues discussing the extreme transgressions of the people of Gilead, or perhaps the extreme bloodshed that happened to the people of Gilead. This chapter will introduce some fresh imagery to describe the heated transgressions of the Jewish people. A word of introduction. We call the different kingdoms Northern Kingdom and Southern Kingdom. Sometimes we call them the two tribes and the ten tribes. Sometimes we call it Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Yisrael. We're now going to add a new term, Shomron, versus Yerushalayim. Here, when we refer to Shomron, we're talking about the capital city of the Northern Kingdom. So when Shomron is used, it really represents the entirety of the Northern Kingdom, not just the capital city itself. Like when a foreign country reports, Washington says, what they really mean is the United States government says. I can't help but point out the significance of the place Shomron. Ironically, the most contested areas, politically, are Yehuda v'Shomron, Yehuda representing the heartland of the Southern Kingdom, and Shomron representing the biblical heartland of the Northern Kingdom. Oh, and I forgot to mention another reference to Northern and Southern Kingdom will be Ephraim versus Yehuda, as we'll see in the very first pasuk. Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ki rafi li Yisrael v'nigla avon Ephraim. When I want to heal Yisrael, when I want to forgive the sins of Ephraim, V'ra'os Shomron ki fa'alu shaker. The evils of Shomron are revealed. They rise up as prosecutors, for they deal in falsehood, in deceit, specifically referring to their business dealings. V'ganav yavo pashat gedud b'chutz. Thieves come, gangs go about the shuk stealing. The Gra understands this pasuk, that as soon as I send them a cure, they sin again. In the daytime, they have theft, embezzlement, pa'alu shaker. At nighttime, their theft is geneva. And then there's public theft. Pashat gedud b'chutz. The theft has become brazen. The pasuk continues, Uval yomru lilvavam, kol ra'asam zacharti. They don't pay attention. They don't take notice to speak to their hearts, to say that Hashem remembers all past deeds. Atas vavum ma'alalehem, neged panai hayu. What, you thought I forgot these deeds? Now the deeds surround them. They're before my face, Hashem says. They stand before me now, and therefore I can't forgive them. As background to the next set of psukim, let's discuss for a moment the political upheaval that happened to the ten tribes towards the end of its era, right before exile. As opposed to the kingdom of Yehuda, which primarily passed from father to son, the kingdom of Yisrael had much greater instability. At most, about four generations would reign continuously, and then another leader would come and uproot the previous monarch line, beginning a new line of succession. In fact, only Yeravam and Yehu are chosen by Hashem through Nevi'im to be the kings of Malchus Yisrael. This is especially telling during the last stage of the ten tribes in their time in Eretz Yisrael in the land of Israel, right before the exile, where over the course of 50 years, there were six monarchs, most of whom executed coups against the previous government and previous king and thus took over. But rarely does that happen in a vacuum. Each time a prince rises from the ranks to overthrow the previous king, he does so with a band or a gang of rebels. And he needs not only the local political power to cement his new throne, but he turns to outside powers like Assyria, paying them a tribute in order for them to support his claim on the throne. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Bera'asam yisamchu melech ubechachashehem sarim. The kings rejoice in their evil. The princes rejoice in their deceit. It's the opposite of what should be, the Gra points out. A king is supposed to support the nation, increase goodness in the world, to employ justice. And these leaders are enjoying corruption, so much so that they encourage their nobles and lords to engage in this corruption and in the immoral behavior. And we'll see that they should have been careful about what they encourage, because when nature takes its course, that corruption will snowball in a way that the kings themselves did not anticipate and could not have wanted. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Kulam mina afim kamo tanur bo'era me'ofeh. Princes engage in wild promiscuity like a baker's heated oven. Yishbos me'ir milush batzeik ad chum tzaso. And just like a baker who stops stoking the fire only during their short time when he's kneading the bread or he's baking the dough, so too they only take short breaks from their promiscuity. The rest of the time they are stoking the flames of their desire. This is what's referred to in the Gemara Sukkah, where it says, Marivo savea masbieho ra'ev. If you starve it, it shrinks, and if you feed it, it grows. Referring to the idea that the more one stokes their lust, the more they need to have that lust satisfied, and then they'll never be satisfied. And this is what the kings encouraged amongst their princes. They encouraged this wanton behavior until they became consumed by it. And so the result is Pasuk Hey, Yom Malkenu Hechelu Sarim, Chamas Miayin. On the days that they should have been celebrating with the king, they became hot with wine. Mashach Yado Es Lo Tzitzim. They joined with the scoffers against the king. Here the kings unintentionally stoked not only the lust of the people, but the rebellion against him. Not surprisingly, lust, drunkenness, and desire for power went hand in hand. Pasuk Vav, Ki kervu katanor libam, ba'ar bam. The princes brought their hearts and themselves close to the oven, making plans and preparations as they lie in wait. They rile each other up as they plan their rebellion. Kol halayla yoshein ofehem. Bokerhu vo'er ke'esh lahava. They're like the baker who sleeps at night when there's nothing to do, but leaps up in the morning like a flaming fire ready for action. So too, now they are ready for the rebellion to begin. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Kulam yechamu katanor va'achlu eshoftehem. They are all heated like an oven. They consume their judges, the rulers, like their kings. Kol malcheihem nafalu, ein kore bahem elai. All their kings fall. And after their kings fall, they offer tributes to nearby nations to get support for their claim to the throne, but they don't turn to Hashem. As we'll see, one bad thing leads to another. As it goes badly for the 10 tribes, since when they turn to these nations, the nations are no longer satisfied with just a little tribute. They want full control. They want to conquer the 10 tribes. Yet another bad snowballing event. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Ephraim ba'amim hu yisbolal. Ephraim haya uga b'li hafucha. Ephraim will become yitbolal. He'll become mixed and intermingled amongst the nations. Ephraim becomes a cake not turned. Think of this image of a cake not turned. What happens when you leave a pancake cooking on one side for too long? From all appearances, it looks just fine. In fact, the visible side is not even cooked or doesn't look cooked. But then you see that, in fact, it's burnt on the other side because you didn't flip it over. So, too, you got mixed up with Assyria. What you saw looked good, but the other side, well, it's going to get a lot worse. Achlu zarim kocho v'hu lo yada. Verse 9. Foreigners have consumed your strength. You gave them grain and money as a tribute, but they wanted it all. Gam seva zarka bo v'hu lo yada. Also, old age was cast upon him, and he doesn't know. As if his weakness and old age has suddenly creeped up on him, and he doesn't realize that he's actually weak and powerless. Va'ana ga'on Yisrael befanav. And the pride of Israel has become humbled, right to their face, right in front of them, so clear, just like it's a testimony. And for all that, v'lo shavu al Hashem elokeyem. They did not return to Hashem their God. V'lo bikshu b'cholzos, and with all that, they haven't returned, nor have they gone to seek Hashem. V'hi Ephraim kiyona fota, ein lev. This is understood that either Ephraim has become like a silly dove, without heart or understanding, or perhaps Ephraim is easily swayed and easily enticed, with no understanding. Mitzrayim kara'u, Ashur halachu. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. You wanted brotherhood, but look what happened. You were enticed to approach them for something so small, the way a dove can be redirected for a few crumbs. And you invited Assyria to help you. The commentaries question the reference here to Mitzrayim, since Assyria is the one that the 10 tribes turned to and is the one who ultimately exiled the 10 tribes, and suggest that perhaps it's referring just that one piece to a later date where Yirmiyahu tells the Jewish people, after they've gone to the Babylonian exile, not to run to Mitzrayim, and yet the remnants run to Mitzrayim after the murder of Gedaliah. Pasuk Yudbet, verse 12, Ka'asher yelechu efrosh aleihem reshti, ka'of hashamayim oridem. And as you go off to Assyria or Egypt, I'll spread my net on them, trapping them from top down, bringing Israel down like a bird trapped in a net. I see Reim, Kishema la'adasam. I'll bring Yisurim, suffering, as their assembly has heard many, many times. Again, a strong rebuke. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Oy lahem, kina didumi meni, shod lahem, ki pashu vi. Ay, for wandering away from me, showed lahem destruction to them, for they have sinned against me. And then similar to the opening pasuk, Va'anochi efdeim v'hema dibru alai chazavim. I want to redeem them. I would have redeemed them, but they spoke lies about me. Again, indicating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for opportunities to redeem Yisrael. He does not wish to, nor desire to punish the Jewish people, or nor to exile them. Pasuk Gedalid, verse 14, V'lo zo'aku elai b'libam, ki yeyelilu al mishkavosam. They did not call out to me with their hearts, they did not call out to me in their hearts, although they wail in their beds. Al dagam v'tirosh yisgoruru, yasuruvi. For the grain and the wine that they stored, what is this talking about? They wail in their beds, but they don't call out to me. It's like the opposite of the phrase, there's no atheist in a foxhole. Here they're miserable, they're lying in their beds, moaning and groaning, but even in such a state, they fail to turn to Hashem. They deny Hashem's providence in their lives. And the flip side too, even when their storage houses are filled with grain, they also rebel against Hashem. This pasuk is pointing out that sometimes Hashem gives us good stuff and we fail to recognize His providence, and then sometimes Hashem sends us the patch and we fail to recognize His providence. The Vilna Gaon understands the next pasuk to be working in the same theme. Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, Va'ani yisarti chizakti zrosam, ve'elai yichashvura. He understands this pasuk as whether I bound them, yisarti, or chizakti zrosam, or whether I strengthen their arms. Either way, they devise evil against me. Again, the theme of whether things are difficult or whether I strengthen them. In neither case are they turning to Hashem. The chapter ends with a dire description and a dire prediction. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. Yashuvu, lo al. They turn away from Hashem. They don't elevate themselves, like the word aliyah. Hayu kekeshes remiyah. They're like a faulty or slackened bow that shoots arrows haphazardly, without focus or success. Yiplu b'charev sarehem, their princes will fall by the sword. Miza'am l'shonam, because of the malicious speech of their tongue that angered Hashem, saying that Hashem does not oversee us, Hashem is not mashgiach on us. Zo la'agam be'eretz Mitzrayim. And the fact that in the end they turn to Mitzrayim for help, Egypt for help, that's going to be a complete mockery. It's going to make them look foolish and ridiculous. There are a few very important points I want to just focus on. Number one, Hashem wants to heal us and redeem us, but we're the ones who prevent it. Two, be careful what you wish for. The king fostered an environment of depravity and lust, encouraging drunkenness and immorality. And what happened? The princes went from one vice to another, ultimately desiring power and rising up and rebelling against the very king who fostered that depravity in the first place. The snowball continues in that the new king invites Ashur in, thinking that he needs a brotherhood with other kings, and he wants support for his claim to the throne. And in the end, Assyria took the best of what we had to offer and ultimately exiled and oppressed us. Many years ago, I heard Rebbetzin Tehila Yeager speak, and she said that the challenge of that generation was Hodu Hashem Ki Tov Ki Li Lam Chasdo, thanking Hashem when things are good and recognizing His loving kindness. That was probably 20 years ago, but I think the point is still just as relevant. One of the messages in this parak is that when Hashem gives us good benefit, we should recognize that Hashem is Mashkiach Aleinu and has divine providence over us. And if we don't, then Chas V'Shalom, Hashem is going to have to send the patch. And even then, the purpose is for us to realize that Hashem is Mashkiach on us, that we're under His direct divine providence, and not the power or the energy of the cosmos. An additional reflection, if I may, on Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, Va'ani yisarti chizakti zro'osam, which the Vilna Gaon understands as whether I bind your arms or I strengthen your arms. They devise evil against me. A new tune has been popping up all over the place, and it certainly dates me, but when they put Mishaberach for Chayalei Tzava Haganah Yisrael, the Israel Defense Force, to the tune of the theme song of Operation Thunderbolt, referring to the Entebbe raid, It's a very poignant image for me. Although this composition has been around for a while, I never heard of it until after October 7th. And then since October 7th, I feel like I hear it all the time. At a chasana recently, during the chuppah, they sang it. And the juxtaposition of these two events, October 7th and the Entebbe raid, really encapsulates the message of this pasuk. Because sometimes we're powerful and sometimes we're powerless. And as Sivan Rachav Meir pointed out, when we reflect back on the events of October 7th, it won't be the military question. It'll be, why were we powerless? Why did Hashem make us powerless? But both of these extremes are created by God. And one can't ignore the effect. This spiritual reawakening and rededication to Jewish values has been very, very poignant. And yet, as this war drags on, we indeed see how very vulnerable we are. And we have none upon whom to rely than our Father in heaven. May He strengthen their arms and protect our brave soldiers.
Thank you for learning Le'ilui Nishmas Gilbert Carcenti, Menachem Mendel Ben Saud.